With Wendy's new $3 English muffin deal, you don't just get breakfast, you get a proper meal. It includes your choice of a bacon, egg, and cheese or a sausage, egg, and cheese English muffin sandwich with a side of small seasoned breakfast potatoes, and all of this is just $3 for a limited time. What is it like having 15 minutes of fame in the NIL era? We'll hear from someone who made a name for himself this NCAA tournament. Plus, we're chatting with Gunter Steiner, who is helping the Miami Grand Prix gear up for its third run as it tries to cement its place in American racing culture. It's Monday, April 8th. I'm Owen Poindexter. It's good to be back. And this is Front Office Sports Today. As we get ready for what should be an epic NCAA men's final, we're looking back at a player who had a brief moment in the sun. March Madness is a time when enduring stars are made, but it's also a time when people capture our attention for a short period, namely the stars of Cinderella teams. What is it like being one of those temporary stars in the NIL era? My colleague David Rumsey spoke with Jack Gulke, who led Oakland to an upset victory over third-seeded Kentucky, and that conversation is next.
I was watching you and listening to you all during the first round of March Madness and right afterwards. Pretty cool story and experience. It seems like it's still going, but I know there was the TurboTax, there was the Buffalo Wild Wings NIL deal afterwards. What's the come down been like since then to where you are now?
Yeah, it's definitely been, it's been a wild ride. It's been really cool. Like you said, like TurboTax reached out pretty much immediately and was like the first one I got. So that was cool. Things have like cooled off, but I think that's just like the cycle of media and stuff. And it was cool because obviously after we did that TurboTax first deal, I think things went really well. It kind of blew up a little bit. And then we were able to reconnect now that I'm here for the Final Four and do some more work together and like obviously with this interview and then also like working in a space with them. So it's kind of cool just to build like an actual, you know, like relationship with the brand. Cause that's definitely the brand that I've worked with the most rather than just kind of one-off thing here and there, which I mean, those are good too, obviously, but with TurboTax, it kind of just fit. Like I've used the software before. I'm an accounting major. Like everyone's making those jokes, so it kind of just fit. And that's kind of the one that I wanted to stick with going forward because, like you said, the come down, the like things do die down pretty fast in this media age. So just kind of picking one specific place to go with.
So with this TurboTax deal specifically, is there plans to have it continue after March Madness and moving forward, or is it kind of just a wait and see approach right now?
I think we've both enjoyed working together and I think it's gone really well so far. But we don't have any like in particular plans moving forward for what we're going to do, but I wouldn't be surprised if we keep working together.
So I know you didn't have any NIL deals before March Madness, right? What has the challenge been in trying to figure out these negotiations and who's helping you with that and what's that like?
It's been interesting. I've been a business student for a while, so I kind of knew like this type of stuff, but you might've heard from other interviews that I did that a couple of my buddies like helped me out mm-hmm. at the beginning. And that was good because they have real jobs where they do that kind of stuff. So they actually, they're not agents, but they know what they're doing. But it's been interesting to try to navigate the whole space. And there's obviously a lot getting thrown at you in a quick amount of time and to have support from my friends in that case. But also one of the things that kind of helped me initially, like after we did the first TurboTax and I kind of was just so busy with the game and things like that, that we kind of just filmed it and got it out there. But after the fact, I realized that they actually like put together this whole like packet, this whole like help book. It's really for parents, but I kind of just went through it because, you know, I'm getting old myself, so I can look through it and learned a lot from it, kind of how to navigate my other deals and things like that, where whether it's tax implications or like just the negotiating side of things, because obviously as a college student, you've got a lot of other things on your plate. So you don't want to waste too much of your time with the semantics, but you know, there's a balance for everything.
Mm-hmm. So I know I saw there was like a Buffalo Wild Wings deal on Twitter. What else was there over the past couple of weeks for you?
Yeah. There was a B-dubs. There was, an UFOS, which is like a slipper, not slipper, like slides brand. There was like a menswear brand, and just like a couple others, that have come through the pipelines, but, TurboTax was kind of the main one for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I know this is probably helping your wallet a little bit, right? how good are we feeling there?
No, it's definitely been appreciated. Going from a broke grad student to get some of these opportunities and just try to take advantage of them because they obviously don't come around all the time, and to be able to, you know, like take advantage of the situation, but also kind of do it in a way that, especially with TurboTax, it kind of fits my brand and my profile of accountant and all that good stuff. Because, like I said, it's something that, that I've tried to learn in the past. Like there was a time where, I was doing my own taxes, trying to help out my own wallet as much as possible. And you know how that goes. I messed it up and then I had to go back and kind of refix things with the actual TurboTax software. So it kind of just made sense.
Obviously NIL is still so new and we're in this age of March Madness, and obviously there's Cinderella's and upsets every year. So for whoever it is next year that might be in a similar position to yours, what have you learned these past 2 weeks and what advice would you give to someone like yourself coming up next year?
Yeah, definitely. I would love to give the next crazy situation guy some advice. For me, like I would just say, try to find someone that you trust that can help you with these things, especially while you're still engaged, while you're still playing and engaged in the tournament, because then it's just crazy if you just don't have time for it at that point. But once you do kind of take a step back and you have your own time to invest in it and things like that, I would just say, make sure you educate yourself on, like the future implications of it, because it's all great when things are coming in fast at you. But, for one, you don't want to take every deal. Like, you don't want to partner with 30 brands or brands that have bad reputations, things like that. And you want to make sure down the line that you know like how these deals are going to affect your personal like finances and things like that. Because especially for someone like me who was just a regular grad student who didn't have any like NIL money coming in or anything like that, knowing like the tax implications in the next year and how to handle those, as because basically you're now a sole proprietor, you're kind of running your own business, and that's not something that you really learn that often in school. So if you're lucky enough to partner with a brand like TurboTax, where they will do your taxes for you while facilitating deals for you, that really helps. But definitely just reaching out to find like a tax assistance and things like that, because those are a lot of times things that get forgotten. Say you get $1 million deal. I wish I had gotten $1 million deal, but say you did, you're not actually bringing home $1 million. Like we all know that, but it's kind of hard once you see that money go in your bank account to remember that.
Did you have any coaches or anybody else in your athletic department that was helping you try to facilitate some of these? I'm new for them as well.
Yeah, definitely new. Our athletic director definitely like kind of just pointed me in the right direction. He didn't want to like kind of interfere with things, but he would just want to make sure everything was going well and wasn't like getting myself in any bad situations, things like that. So the athletic department's definitely been a big help, and they've been supportive and everything, and just making sure everything's up to snuff with compliance and things like that.
So I think I read you're going to still try to play pro in some capacity if you can. What is that next couple of months in the summer going to look like for you?
Yeah, I'll be busy, you know, like training and working out in, I'm actually going to go down to Dallas. I signed an agent who has a facility down there. So go down to Dallas and I'll be working out down there and trying to prep for the draft and summer league, stuff like that. So get some NBA workouts in. And then kind of once the summer starts moving forward, I'll decide like if I'm going to stay around here and try to play on the NBA or the G League side of things, or if I want to go overseas to Europe and play over there.
Was that in the cards at all before the tournament happened, or did that really come after March Madness?
That was always the plan. Like, there's definitely been more opportunities that have opened up, obviously, but I always wanted to continue playing professionally and continue growing my brand with things like this. So I was just lucky to open up a couple more doors.
After you guys beat Kentucky, John Calipari had some words just about the state of the game and how kind of lamenting that a lot of kids like yourself are just a lot older than the kids that he might have on his team. Just in general, maybe not Kentucky versus Oakland, but just in general in college basketball on the men's side, what do you think of where we're at with kids being able to stay longer and the sport is getting a little bit older?
I mean, it definitely has, like, it in no doubt has hurt, like, the high schoolers coming out just because there's less opportunities, with guys switching teams and staying around. But, I think it's made the game better and it's made, just made for a better product because the players are more experienced. They're higher basketball IQ. They're better, just obviously overall players and things like that. And, I think that makes things better and also more competitive, like throughout the levels, because it used to be you would just get the NBA draft picks at the high majors, and then the low majors or mid majors would have, you know, like a guy who's the same age as those lottery picks and hasn't developed yet, but isn't going to the NBA. Versus now, it's guys who have had more time to develop and they can compete with those younger guys. So I think that's just kind of how it's changed.
What's been the best memory you think since the game ended? Obviously winning that and being able to play in the second round was awesome. But since you guys exited the tournament, what's been the best memory for you so far?
Yeah. Since leaving the tournament, honestly, I've talked about it with my friends who've been helping me through this whole NIL process. And we were just talking about how, like, years down the line, like, we're going to look at it and be like, this was such a crazy, like, whirlwind of events. And, the fact that we were able to partner with, like, great companies afterwards, like you're saying, off the floor stuff, like to be able to do these type of deals with a company like TurboTax that's out there. Everyone knows who they are, like, super, front facing company, like, helping people out and stuff like that is really cool. And something that, like, we're going to talk about in 10, 20 years and be like, how did we end up in that situation? You know what I mean?
Cool. It's been fun to watch, and good luck this weekend and moving forward as well.
Yeah, thanks, David. Great to talk to you.
Up next, the Miami Grand Prix is the first race Formula One added when it blew up in America, and it is maybe the best bellwether we have to judge F1's progression in the U.S. My next guest, Gunter Steiner, was recently let go as the boss of the Haas team, a job he held for 7 years, and he quickly took a new role within Miami GP to work on building on that event as we head towards its third iteration next month. That conversation is next. I'm joined now by newly minted Miami Grand Prix ambassador, Gunter Steiner. Welcome, Gunter.
Thanks for having me, and hello to everyone.
Great to have you on. So you parted ways with Haas in January, but you already have deals with German broadcaster RTL. I understand you're a producer on an office comedy with CBS. Now you're working with the Miami Grand Prix, so not much of a break for you. On Miami, so we're heading toward the third iteration of the race. Do you think that event still has room to grow, even as the initial hype wears off?
Yeah, there is room to grow because when you see the event, it has grown in itself. It's not only how many people come, but the event from the first year to the second year was a big step, and this year there will be more because I think that the team of Mr. Ross and Tom Garfinkel, they've got a vision where they want to take the Grand Prix. They want to really make it a standout event in the calendar of F1. And they achieved that when they started 2 years ago for the first time. I mean, they raised the bar for everybody else. Everybody was looking at Miami and saying, wow, what are they doing? And obviously the other events now worldwide want to follow or do something special as well. So obviously Miami doesn't stand still. Mr. Ross and Tom, they are not just staying there where they are. Every year they do more. Like this year, there is a lot of racing going on. The F1 Academy, which is the female championship, is there. It is a sprint race, which means there is racing going on already on Saturday. There is only six out of the 24 races are sprint races. There is Porsche Cup. There is so much things going on in Miami, and they keep on going. And therefore, I think it can as long as people with vision is there, you can make everything better all the time. And I think the vision is there.
Yeah, and how do you see other F1 races pulling ideas from Miami?
A lot of, already last year, it was visible that a lot of people need to pull their socks up to stay on the calendar, because you can see like Miami doing all these things, and all of a sudden it's not a security that you have an F1 race in the next 5 years if you're not giving entertainment to the people. Because it's not only to host a race these days, it's to give the people which come to the race an event, you know, that you keep them entertained for the whole day. 10 hours a day you need to do. And it's possible to do, but you need to put a lot of effort in. Being granted the right to do an F1 Grand Prix now is not anymore like just doing a Grand Prix. You need to give really entertainment to the people which come to their race.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, on those other races getting squeezed, I mean, it's largely a European phenomenon where some of the classic races, you know, aren't guaranteed a spot on the calendar going forward. Do you think that's a wise move by the FIA to expand globally, but to have less going on in the continent that kind of made F1 what it is?
I don't think it has to do with the continent. It has to do who can put on what Formula One is, because Formula One grew. The growth of Formula One as a sport in the last 5 years is immense. And it's the same, like if you don't do a good job, your boss doesn't extend your contract. I mean, it's normal. And it's the same for a Grand Prix. It's nothing. They get the license to do a Grand Prix, but if they don't do a good job, they are not on the calendar anymore, because there's somebody there waiting to take the spot away, because there is a lot of demand to do F1 races. So I think it's nothing to do with Europe. It's just like some of the European races, they stagnated. And some of them actually picked up what needs to be done to stay on the calendar. And as I said, if events like Miami come on, the bar is getting raised, and you need to follow. To grow the sport needs to do better. We need to do better to stay as one of the best sports in the world.
Of course, we've got three races in the U.S. already. There are some amount of rumblings that there could even be, you know, maybe a race in Chicago, New York, perhaps. Do you think there's room for a fourth?
I think there is room for a fourth, but not imminently. I think it takes a little bit of time. I think what needs to be done to solidify what is here now, you know, to stabilize the American viewership, because the growth started to happen about 5 years ago. And it was a rapid growth of interest in the States. And if it is not sustainable, this growth. So I think the races now need to be stabilized, because it's no point to put another race on the calendar and then one of the existing races is going to suffer for it, you know. So it's better to stabilize what you have got now, and then maybe in 3-5 years add another one when the market is ready for it. So that's my idea behind it. But in the end, I'm not running F1, but I think F1 knows that is the best way forward.
You know, we've got this, you know, big initial hype, a lot of it driven by Drive to Survive. How do you maintain that American audience?
I think with making the sport interesting, and I think, as I said, we gained a lot of people. Now we have to give them that they need to that they want to come back. And for example, what Miami is doing, there is a campus ticket that you can get for relatively low entrance fee to it, very close to the race car. You can get close to the action, to all that stuff. And we now need to bring people to the race events so they stay loyal to the sport. This is like, and I think it's possible, because it's a very interesting sport. And then next year, the F1 movie will come out, hopefully. You know, it was delayed because of the strikes in Hollywood, but I think that will create again interest, because it's a very high-end produced movie. So there is a lot of things going on to keep the people interested. But the most interesting thing in Formula One is the sport itself. So as long as the sport stays interesting, I think people will keep on coming back.
Yeah, and along those lines, do you think it's an issue? I mean, we're three races into the calendar this year. We pretty much already know who's going to win the whole thing. We know the top driver, we know the top team, unless there's an injury or, you know, some mechanical issue that arises. It's going to be Red Bull. Is that a problem in terms of, you know, growing the sport?
I think it's not ideal. I mean, we need to be honest about it, to have this dominance of Max. But then look at the last race in Australia. Max didn't win. Obviously, he had a mechanical failure, therefore he didn't race, or he just started the race and went out in lap one. But even if he would have been taking part of it, the Ferraris were very fast, and I think they could have challenged, if not beaten, the Red Bull from Max Verstappen. So, you know, I think we need to give it a little bit of time. Obviously, we have got the proof that he's very fast the first two races. He was in a different league, but in Australia, he wasn't in a different league, to say the least. So I think we need to give it a little bit of time and see what else can be done. But then again, there is a lot of other fighting going on, a lot of other competition in F1. So I wouldn't panic, because even if Max wins the championship, and I wouldn't be there with you saying, oh, we know already what is happening and he will be winning 100%. Nothing is 100%. It's always some surprises happening. I mean, look at the McLaren, how close they are now. You know, so there's always something happening. And, you know, I would say it could be get still interesting this year.
It's a manageable problem. But then we're heading into 2026 after that, which, you know, could be a big reset with new engine specifications coming in.
You're absolutely right. 2026, everything will be, we start from zero again, you know, it will be, everybody has got a chance. Obviously, the big teams with the biggest resource, with the biggest experience, will have an advantage to be in front. But it doesn't mean that, I mean, anybody could come up in 26 with a good car, because not only the engine rules change. I mean, first of all, we have got now 5 or 6 different engines, because Ford is coming in as well with Red Bull. So it's 6 engines or 7 even. But then also the chassis regulation change, all the aero changes. So, you know, everything starts from zero. There is no legacy which goes into the 26 car. The only legacy is the good teams have good people. But it doesn't mean that anybody else can catch up. So I think it is for sure in 26, I think there will be some surprises. But I would not give up also on next year, because these cars, they are so... Now the regulations are stable so long. So longer the regulations are stable, more difficulties to find gains in this car. So if somebody can, I think Red Bull will have a bigger problem to make way forward than the other ones which need to catch up to Red Bull. So if the development program this year of a Ferrari or McLaren or even Mercedes is good, they could challenge anybody. But also for next year, once you start again, it's a complete new car next year. You learn your lesson and you do something. So obviously, I'm with you there. Red Bull in the moment seems like they cannot get it wrong. Yes, but I'm always a little bit careful with saying they cannot get it wrong, because what happens with that? If you think you're doing everything right, you get arrogant and you take your eye off the ball, you know? So I think there's a big chance still that something before 2026 can happen, that Red Bull is not in this dominating position anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. Lewis Hamilton recently said that FIA president Ben Sulayem has never had his support. Were you surprised to hear that?
Oh, I mean, he must have had his support, otherwise he wouldn't have been voted. You know, has he now the support he would need? Because he's critiqued quite a lot. And I think... you know, it's some of it is justified. You know, there was some mistakes made by the FIA lately, but I was surprised about that comment, because so he never had the support. Because if you don't have the support, you don't get voted. It's a voted job. It's not even a job. It's a presidency.
Mm-hmm. And how would you describe the relationship between the F1 teams and the FIA?
I think there is a little bit of disconnect there. Because, as you said, the obvious reasons are there are a few decisions which were not right. There is the FIA as a regulatory body should be not talked about. That would be the best. That's always like the you shouldn't talk about the police.
Right.
You know, this is
like they're doing their job. It's not a topic.
They should be in their job, and they're not present in the sport. And for one reason or another, they are able in the moment to create a lot of headlines which nobody actually wants or needs, you know, because they are not contributing positively to the sport.
Mm-hmm. And is part of that exacerbated by F1's growth? I mean, if the FIA could put 30 races on the calendar, I bet they would, just because that's more money. Obviously, at some point,
you know, I mean, there's regulations in place, but also the drivers and the team principals are already saying, you know, we're already stretched pretty thin here. Are there just different incentives that are causing tension there?
Oh, I don't think F1 putting more races on is distracting for the FIA. I don't really know why the FIA in the moment is in this position they are in. Normally, because it's a three-party relationship, teams, F1 and FIA, and it doesn't seem to be working well, because there's always an issue between them. And then these three entities put the show on the road, you know, and they need to work together. And if the sport is not policed, I would say correctly, maybe it's the wrong word, obviously that creates friction, and that is there in the moment and it needs to be sorted. I think F1 is so big that it can live with it, but it's not something which is positive. And, you know, anything which is not positive is actually going to be negative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you think there are any structural changes or something that needs to be sorted out for the long-term health of the sport and just in that realm there?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the governance of the FIA needs to be collaborating with the other two entities, with FOM and FIA and with FOM and the team, sorry. And that will come again. It's just like in the moment, it isn't ideal.
Gunter Steiner, really enjoyed the chat. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's it for today. Thank you to my colleagues for holding things down while I was on vacation. Also, last call for free front office sports hats. Drop us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Screenshot the review, send it to me at owen@frontofficesports.com, and you may get a free hat just in time for summer. If you sent me one last week and I didn't get back to you, send it again. I have many unread emails. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.